Links Radio Sport.
Hello, hello, sports fans. It is wonderful to be back with you once again. A very happy Friday evening to you, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. I do hope you're enjoying yourselves. And what better way to kick off your weekend than with all the sporting highlights from your sporting week. So coming up on the show today, FC Isle of Man season finally gets underway this weekend. Do you have the names of that starting
squad? Yes, I do, yes. You're not going to have it.
The suspense. Torturous. Elsewhere, Rob Holden is the island's brand new cycling development officer.
My background is ex-professional cyclist, you know, when pictures were black and white and no internet and all that sort of thing, so I can't prove it.
Plus, I have rugby news, Commonwealth Games news, Special Olympics news, you name it, I've got it. Just don't quote me on that. Yes, so welcome along to Friday Sport Preview. It's lovely to be back with you. Well, like I said, it feels like it's been an age since we last spoke. I'm sorry to pry you away from the Olympics. I hope you've been loving all the action happening in Tokyo. But let's see what's been happening a little closer to home. Now, it has been a long time coming, but FC Isle of Man, after waiting and waiting and waiting, is finally kicking off its debut in the Northwest Counties Football League Division 1 South this weekend. Kicking off, pun intended, thank you. So, tomorrow the chosen squad will travel to play Main Road FC. I had a last minute chat with the club's football performance and operations manager Paul Jones ahead of the big day.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a whirlwind really the last couple of weeks. Is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? You know, we've had so many kind of false starts over the last kind of 18 months that it is a little bit surreal that we're sat here less than 24 hours' time. We will be kicking a ball at Main Road and in our first ever competitive fixture. So, yeah, I'm feeling excited, tired, emotional from some early mornings this week. And, yeah, just generally, like, can't wait to see the lads get going, really. And hopefully I don't need to do too many more of these interviews and people are talking to the manager and the players and, you know, with everyone else behind the scenes as the season goes along.
And how are the team and how is Chris feeling as well?
I think they're like super excited, you know, like I think any of us would give a lot to be one of those 11 starting in the first ever competitive fixture. So I really hope, and I know they're really looking forward to it. They're really excited. They can't wait to pull on the jersey and just give it a good go. And Chris has like been waiting for this for the last 18 months as well, and you know, every day it's got closer, he's got more and more excited about it. So yeah, they just can't wait to get there now.
Do you have the names of that starting
squad? Yes, I do. Yes, you're not going to have it.
Worth a try.
Sorry, that's going to get posted out on our social media to I think tonight at some point or maybe tomorrow morning. But yeah, the players know. Mm-hmm. They've known for a couple of days. They've managed to keep it to themselves in the sense of it not being plastered all over social media. Yeah. So that's a good starting point. But yeah, the lads at starting 11 know who it's going to be. They've got their idea of what they're going to be doing. And we'll let people know in the next kind of 12 hours or so.
Build up the suspense.
Indeed, yeah.
So what are your predictions for the game?
I don't know. I watched a couple of bits of Main Road from their pre-season, some videos that have been kind of knocking about. So they look, you know, they're a really good side. They try and play a little bit of football. You know, they've got some really good players in there. So it's going to be a tough game. You know, their season kind of campaign is at this sort of level. So I don't know. Like, having worked with the players for kind of 3 or 4 years, I've got a good idea how good they could be, whether they're going to go in at that level from day one and can knock it out of the park, or whether it's going to take a little bit of time for them to get used to what's required of them to really compete at that level. I'm not sure. I think anybody who says otherwise is kind of like, you know, not being honest, I don't think. So, you know, we wouldn't have started the project if we didn't really believe in the players we've got at the moment and also kind of what's coming through the local game. So I think they can go and do a really good job. All I hope they do tomorrow is just do their best. And, you know, what will come off the back of that. You know, if they're the better team on the day and they take their chances, then we'll win. And if we're not the better team on the day and take our chances, we'll still win. And sometimes you can be the better team and lose as well. So I just hope they go out there, they see it as an opportunity. They use that kind of excitement and adrenaline to fuel a really good performance. And, That's what I hope to see, and that's what I believe we will see.
You kind of answered this question already, but the next question I was going to ask was, what would be the locker room talk? If you're going into this and you don't know much about the team, it's the first big fixture, you're going into a lot of unknown territory. So what do you say to your squad to rile them up before that first big game?
I don't think you need to rile them up. I wouldn't imagine, you know, it's up to Chris, to what Chris does, and, you know, Chris works in his own way. So the players are committed, the players are enthusiastic, they've got bundles of energy, you know. It's about sticking to what Chris wants them to do and not getting carried away with the occasion and just playing, you know, every second at a time, you know, and the players are capable of doing that. They played in front of 2,500 people against Guernsey and did that from minute one. So we know our players are capable of playing in big games and big occasions, and the difference now is they've got between 38 and 42 big occasions in the season, and that's the challenge.
How do you minimise the impact of travelling to games?
Well, one of the things we've done is we're training two or three times a week at 6:30 in the morning, so the players are used to getting up early if they weren't already, having a long day at work, and, you know, that'll mimic the travel that we've got tomorrow when we're there and back in a day. Other than that, it's about the players just looking after themselves, you know, making sure that they eat well, they sleep well, they rest when they can, and they're fit as fit as they can be in order to last, you know, 42, 90 plus minutes every week or over the course of the season. So again, it's a bit of an unknown for us. We don't know how it's gonna pan out. You know, Chris has selected a really strong group of players. You know, there's a lot there, and they're all very, very capable. So it really will be a squad effort for this season. I don't think we're gonna have the same 11, 12 players playing every week. So Chris rotating the pack when required, players making sure they're making good decisions around lifestyle choices.
Do they have any strict curfews?
Like, they're adults, you know, you've got to trust people, haven't you? And you've got to, they know what it means. They know how much work has gone in behind the scenes. They understand what opportunity is being provided to them. And they know their responsibility in going out and making sure they can perform on a week-to-week basis. And to be honest, if they don't understand that over the season and they don't respect that, then they probably won't be an FC Alaman player very long.
Do you have any ideas where you're aiming to finish this season?
Ask me in 6 months' time, once we've played all the teams. Like, of course we want to go in and do really, really well. You know, Guernsey's first season, they got promoted first season. Jersey did the same when they started off, you know. There's a lot of people probably looking at us going in and expecting that from us. But as I've said before already, you know, today and previously, it's a tough, tough group, and it's a tough, tough division. And the Northwest area is a hotbed of non-league clubs. And if you look at the National League in particular, there's an awful lot of Northern teams in there, and the standard's really, really high. So, you know, we're not going in with our eyes closed. You know, we know it's going to be a super tough season, and it's going to be really, really hard. And some excellent teams that are spending some decent money on bringing some players that probably wouldn't be playing at this level normally, but, you know, playing a little bit higher up the pyramid. So, like, of course, we want to do as well as we can. And, you know, if that's getting promoted automatically or getting promoted through playoffs or finishing mid-table, then this season's about understanding where we're at, and then planning to how we can build on it year on year over the next kind of 5 or 10 years. So I'm hopeful we'll be really, really competitive and be right up there at the top. But if we're not, then that's where we are. And then we need to be realistic about that and then put a plan in place to climb up the table.
And just finally, how has support been from people on the island?
Brilliant.
Yeah, they've been amazing. Mad fans yet?
Yeah, we've got loads. We've got a good number that are coming over on Saturday, and people in the UK and England that are going to come down and see us as well, which is lovely. I think, as you know, there is so much momentum going into the last season and then the Guernsey games, and then it has fizzled out a little bit. And, you know, the supporters have definitely felt that, and we as people in the club have felt that a little bit as well. So, you know, normally we'd be playing our first league fixture at home, but, you know, the borders don't allow for that to happen at the moment because not enough people in the UK have had the opportunity to be 2+2. So we're playing away, but you know, after three or four games and people see us playing and the, you know, the stories coming back, hopefully about how well the players are doing, then I'm sure more and more of the Manx community will get behind it. But those that have already have been fantastic. And yeah, I can't wait to see how this all unfolds over the next kind of 12 months.
Paul Jones there, and very best of luck to FC Isle of Man tomorrow in your debut. We will be cheering you on from back home on the island. Kickoff is at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, and Manx Radio's very own Alan Partridge, also known as Chris Cave, will be at the game to provide regular updates throughout, courtesy of FC Isle of Man.
Manx Radio Sport.
There's more Manx action happening across the pond this weekend as well, as former Southern Nomads rugby player Patrice Bell is set to take part in an England under-18s camp. The prop with deceptive speed, as described by Isle of Man Rugby, left Castle Rushen High School a year ago to pursue his rugby dreams and hasn't looked back since. He has been snapped up by Sale Sharks and is now under the watchful eye of England rugby since the move. Best of luck, Patrice. Go show them that deceptive speed you're made of. Cycling now, and the Isle of Man has a brand new cycling development officer, or we will do in September when he officially starts. Rob Holden is taking up the role, which will see him in charge of all things bike-related that the light on the island touches, like the Mufasa of cycling. He won't only be focused on high-performance Manx athletes, but also active travel, bike for life, and extreme cycling, the likes of BMX and downhill racing. I spoke to Rob and head of performance cycling, Gianni Epifani, earlier today.
My background is as a performance, you know, as ex-professional cyclist, many, you know, when pictures were black and white and no internet and all that sort of thing, so I can't prove it. but apparently I did race. So yeah, it's interesting. The Isle of Man story, and it is a story, and that's what makes it people so interested, I think, is you can go right back to the 1950s and see a cyclist from the Isle of Man achieving at the international level. So that started with Stuart Slack in what were the Empire Games, now the Commonwealth Games. And every decade we've produced someone now in, I think it was around the late 1990s, early 2000s, Isle of Man cycling had a group of people, just enthusiasts, who decided that they needed to do something for the young people who were cycling. And what's come out of that is what Dot Tilbury now delivers at, or has done for the last, she'll crucify me if I don't know the answer, about 20 years at the NSC, and which is frankly the envy of the UK in terms of having young people riding bikes, having fun, and then some of them come out of it and deliver a performance level. And it's truly amazing, you know. So that, you know, when you look at what we do well, I'd say we need to support that. And what can we do to have the continuation of that? Like Dot says, she's not going to be around forever, but it needs an army of volunteers to run it. I'd suggest it needs a better facility to run it, and one that would support the community as well, not just, you know, the elite side of cycling. So it's, you know, it's identifying things that we already do well and supporting it and going forward in that continuation, because there's no doubt, I hate to use the term, you know, it's a sausage maker, you know, you're shoving things in and stuff's coming out the other end, and it's effectively what it is. It is that simple, and it's great. And what Dot does well is she makes it fun as well, which is exactly what you need at a young age.
Does Dot run the sessions that are on a Tuesday night at the NSC?
That's exactly it.
Because I remember doing athletics, I would go down for training on a Tuesday, and I remember hearing the amount of people, and I'd be like, oh God, I hope they're not here to watch us train. And then I'd be like, oh, it's okay, it's the cyclists, you know. And it was always so popular. Are those numbers still the same today?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the last count, I think you're talking anywhere between 250 and over 300. So the kids that turn up there, so you can turn up on a balance bike at a very young age, you know, if you can ride a balance bike. So a balance bike is one with no pedals on, you just scoot round, up to the age of 16. So, you know, sort of once you get to the age of 9 or 10, you start to see the drop handlebar bikes and races for that. And then, you know, it gets a little bit more performance related, if you like, and racing.
Do you cover aspects of the extreme sports, the extreme cycling, so mountain biking, downhill biking? Is that your
absolutely
area? Well,
I think you're absolutely right. So if you look at, from a performance point of view, the Olympic sports are downhill mountain biking, cross-country mountain biking, BMXing, which is topical today as we've just Great Britain have just won a gold and a silver. I think the question I'd ask is how can we support those different disciplines to achieve what, you know, so if you look from the grassroots level at what DOT's doing, is there anything we can do to support those different disciplines to do something similar, or is it even possible? I don't know. And this is the point about gathering information. We need to find out that information from the people who are on the ground trying to do the best for those different disciplines, how Isle of Man Cycling can help support them to be better at what they do, and just gather that information. Because quite frankly, I don't know. That's the whole point of consulting with the different volunteers.
Yeah, and I think it's important to be able to say, I don't know, but I will find out for you, sort of thing. That's really important. What did you make of Cav's huge comeback?
well, again, it's not a cycling story. I think it's just a story of inspiration, and I think that's why it attracted so much attention, really. Obviously, it means more to a small community like the Isle of Man, and it resonates more, I think, but I don't underestimate what sort of the attention it attracted worldwide. From looking at how the last few months were with him, you could actually see the change in him in terms of he changed teams and how it is. But it's the world we live in now. Everyone's an expert, aren't they, in terms of how his career was and wasn't going. And and my own viewpoint is, one of his best achievements, I think, in sporting history, obviously I've got a little bit of confirmation bias on that, is in 2016, or even 2015, to ride the Olympic Games in Rio, he had to qualify personally on the track. So what that meant to him is, normally when he'd be doing things to prepare for the road season, he had to go away to places like Moscow and Russia to ride World Cup track racing to actually qualify himself for the Olympics. So he had to do that. Then he had to do his road season earlier 2016. He won the first stage of the Tour de France and wore the yellow jersey, retired out of the Tour de France to go to the Olympic Games in Rio, rode the track and won a silver medal in the Omnium. And that is unfathomable in any stretch of the imagination. So that story on itself. So out of that, I would suggest that...
Did he win a silver medal in the World Road Race Champs that year as well?
He could have done in Qatar, to Sagan, yeah. So to look at that kind of different disciplines, aspects... of cycling, they're polar extremes almost. So phenomenal. And I think out of that, I don't know for sure, but not long after that he got Epstein-Barr virus, so which is glandular fever effectively. So I think it just goes to show you can't write him off. And he's a unique character, isn't he, you know, in terms of how resilient he is, how determined he is, you know, but also, you know, vulnerable as well. And I think that story is interesting.
If anyone is listening to this and wants to get involved in cycling, be them any age, any ability, what is the best way for them to get in touch with you?
That's one of the weak points of Isle of Man Cycling is the visibility of Isle of Man Cycling. Yeah, no, it is. And, you know, and I think we have to be honest with ourselves. You know, I find it hard to find information sometimes about local cycling, and I'm involved with it in a little bit. So for anyone new, it must be very frustrating. So I think in terms of, obviously, it depends what it is, but there's various clubs have different websites depending on what discipline you want to do. So there's a couple of road bike clubs. But if you're young and you just want to have a little bit of fun in a safe environment, then the NSC on a Tuesday night between the months of April and end of August are perfect for that. Really simple to get involved with it. You know, there's no hassle to entering it or anything like that. They're really welcoming down there, which is what I like and what it should be. I think the outcome I'd like to see for Isle of Man Cycling is that, you know, no matter whether you ride your bike for sport, leisure or transport, you should be able to easily get the information you need and you want from one place. That's my own personal ambition. That's what I'd like to see.
And we were talking before, exciting times because the athletics is starting in the Olympics. So, Gianni, you're an expert in the field of athletics.
Not an expert, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it. Just started this morning, so it was great to see.
Any predictions?
Well, I think I've just discovered I'm rubbish with names, but in the men's and women's middle distance, I think Laura Muir will get a medal. I'm not sure what colour. She's got a teammate, and again, I can't remember her name, who's doing the 800. I think she could get a medal as well. And there's another Great Britain runner. So it's in the 800 metres, they're really strong. And in the men's middle distance as well, I think we've got a few medal hopes. And Dean Rasher-Smith in the sprints, I'm sure she'll come away with some medals as well. Mm-hmm. And there'll be some surprises, which is great about the Olympics. There'll be some athletes there who've maybe just got to the Olympics, maybe not there at the moment, not seen as a medal contender, and will come away with a medal. So that's I'm really looking forward to the next five or six days.
Yeah, it's exciting. Why does the Olympics feel so athletics and gymnastics focused? I always hear people go, oh, I love the athletics, or I love the gymnastics.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
It's an interesting one. I just think back to my own memories of early Olympics as a child and as a young person. It was always the 100 metres was the first thing. As you say, the gymnastics with the Russians back in the 70s and 80s. But I think it's definitely those two events that grab your attention. And I go back to the a lot of listeners may not remember this, is the Steve Ovett and Steve Cram, Seb Coe era, mm-hmm. which I remember, you know, you'd be running around the streets thinking you're either Seb Coe or you're Steve Ovett, you know, or Steve Cram. So,
who were
you? I was Steve Cram.
I thought you would be. Good working class boy.
Same build.
I always wanted to be Denise Lewis.
All right. Oh,
cool.
Growing up, I was like, I'm either going to be a marine biologist or Denise Lewis. And I became neither. So, but what do you think of the addition of skateboarding?
I'm pretty positive about it. I think mm-hmm. it opens up the Olympics to a new audience, and it's got to move the times. A lot of young people are out there on their skateboards, and I don't know if you've tried it. It's really hard.
It's really difficult.
You know, you need a lot of skill, good bit of fitness, and good core. So
it's exactly that, though, isn't it? It's new audiences, isn't it? And you've got to be current, and you've got to be. I think you've got to recognise the skill involved, haven't you? You know, and
really skillful. But no, I think it's positive. It's got to go. You know, it's got to move that way.
Rob Holden and Gianni Epifani there. Congrats, Rob. In the words of RuPaul,
good luck and don't it up.
But I'm sure you won't. And I've got a few local headlines to leave you with. Applications are now open for the Isle of Man Commonwealth Games Association's paid internship. Now, it's going to be based at offices at the NSC and will run for 44 weeks. The placement is part of the EQUIP programme, an initiative from the Commonwealth Games Federation. So the role starts in September, and it's fair to say the successful applicant will be kept very busy with the Games in Birmingham in 2022. Exciting times. Full details on how to apply can be found at manxradio.com. Elsewhere, this weekend, the Isle of Man Special Olympics-sponsored 12-hour sports marathon is back. So tomorrow, that's the 31st of July, athletes will be taking on multiple activities non-stop from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Those taking part can choose to get involved with as many different activities as they'd like, which range from cycling and football to Zumba and Boccia. Each athlete will be sponsored. A full list of sports and times so you can go down and cheer them on can be found at manxradio.com on our sports page. And finally, in netball, how could I go a whole programme without mentioning netball? Isle of Man Netball is looking for volunteers to help bring new ideas and experiences to the organisation, with the aim of continually improving itself and an emphasis on inclusivity. The body is looking for what it describes as diversity champions. So if you're interested in getting involved, Isle of Man Netball wants to hear from you, and you can get in touch with them by emailing development@netball.im. And with that, I'll leave you to your Friday night. Best of luck to all of you competing this weekend. In the words of FC Isle of Man's Paul Jones, you're all
brilliant
in my books. Thanks, Paul. So enjoy, happy sporting, and bye for now.